Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for Giants baseball. We're joined by Melissa Lockhart of The Athletic. As I say so many times on the show, if you want to get an expert on the draft, the minor leagues in the Bay Area, or around baseball, Melissa is the person to talk to. Melissa, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're doing fine, and the second half of the season, we're anxious to get it underway and get some of these games going. But this was a big week for baseball, and it started last Sunday night with the draft, and I'm very anxious to talk to you about what the Giants did and even what the A's did, some very interesting names. But first of all, I want to ask what you thought about the draft with Rob Manfred going Las Vegas style and the fans booing him and all that. What did you think of that?
You know, I mean, it's definitely a good thing that the event gets a lot more attention than it ever used to. I think, you know, for years it was sort of an afterthought. They sort of shoved it into the middle of, you know, midweek series and in June, and people sort of passed it by. So I think it's really nice that we're finally at a point where it can be on when there's no games on and people can kind of focus on it. I do think the second and third day got a little bit lost with the rest of All-Star Week, but at least that first round, you know, people were able to pay attention to it the way they do with the NBA and the NFL.
Yeah, I thought it had some excitement to it. I was a little disappointed that more first-round picks were not there, but maybe with COVID and the traveling and who knows what the motivation was. But what do you think about Manfred getting booed all the time? Is it just traditional with the commissioners to get booed when they come out there?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, obviously, you know, the commissioners are rarely popular these days, I think. And certainly, I think Rob Manfred has had plenty of critics. But it sort of sounded like there was a group of teenage fans that were in the stands there that just every time he got up were booing him. So I'm not sure it was necessarily reflective of the entire crowd that was there. But certainly the tradition brought over from the NFL draft, at the very least.
Yeah, it was. It reminded me of that. You know, the Green Bay Packer fans or the Jets fans, no matter what they did, the commissioner would come out and there would be a lot of booing. So it was part of it. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, you know, it was a good atmosphere.
You know, years ago, and not that many years ago, when the Giants were struggling to find hitters, I jokingly said on the air, and I really did say this, I said, you know, I think that's when they had like 30 rounds of the draft or whatever, 40 rounds. I said, why don't you just go out and draft 40 hitters? Just get 40 hitters. You need hitting. And you know something? They need pitching, and they almost went out and just drafted the pitchers. So let's talk about the Giants draft, and especially the number one pick, who I like a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, certainly the Angels took your advice to heart. They went 20 pitchers for 20 rounds, which is pretty amazing. But the Giants went for the first 9 picks as pitchers, and Will Bednar certainly is you know, a highlight of that group. I mean, here's a guy that not only has starter stuff, but he's got that kind of special it factor that you like to see from guys that you give a ball in a must-win game, and they can kind of bear down and give that their best effort in the biggest moments. So, you know, he's a guy that I think is fairly polished already. I don't know how much he'll pitch this year, just given how deep he went in with the College World Series and the number of innings. But once he does get started on his pro career, I imagine he's one who moves fairly quickly. And, you know, he's got that high velocity, can move the fastball to different quadrants and uses his secondary pitches really well, and just is a really fierce competitor. And I think that's, you know, an underrated factor when you're looking at pitching, because so much of it now is measured by TrackMan and radar guns. And, you know, we forget what it's like when somebody's on the mound and they're going to be challenged with having to throw their best stuff against another team's best hitter, how they react. And he's shown that he can react really well to that.
Yeah, I like him. Number one, Mississippi State. He was a star in the College World Series in the championship game and threw 6 great innings against Vanderbilt. And plus his brother pitches for the Pirates, so you have that bloodline as well. But if he can throw the way I saw him throw when they showed the clips after he was drafted, it looked like the top of the strike zone with movement and a slider that worked. Now, he doesn't have a changeup yet, and of course, for young pitchers, that's the last thing they really put together. But it hit me. I said, why not relief for this guy? And, you know, they do have college pitchers who turn into relievers right away. I thought maybe he could get in the big leagues next year as a reliever.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly possibilities for that. And if the team is really in need of a late-inning impact reliever, you know, they'll look to all options, and that would be one. But, your biggest value is finding a controllable starter who is going to be someone you can build a rotation around. So I think he'll certainly be developed that way. It's pretty easy to move someone as a reliever if you need that to happen, and happen pretty quickly. But I imagine he'll get started out as a starter. They'll work on that changeup. They'll work on turning a lineup over three times, and they'll see what they can go and get from there.
Well, they take such time, and with their starting pitchers, I'd like to see them before 2030. You know, that's the whole thing. Oh, we'll see what happens. But I'm very enthusiastic about the pick, and I like it. I think they did really well. But there was some controversy around the pick because there was a young shortstop, Khalil Watson, who should have gone in the top 10, who didn't. The Giants could have drafted him, a great athlete. He ended up going number 16 a couple of picks later to the Marlins. What did you think of that?
Yeah, you know, I was a little bit surprised just because not only is Khalil Watson a huge talent, but he's also from North Carolina, which is, you know, where Giants scouting director Michael Holmes is such, you know, involved with that whole region in terms of scouting and really knows that area very well. But, you know, I think a lot of times you go in with a plan and, you know, you kind of have an idea of who you really want and also how you want to spend the rest of your top 10 round bonus pool money. And that just may not have fit in because I imagine Watson will sign an above slot deal with the Marlins. So, but he's a really interesting talent and, you know, very dynamic up the middle, high upside player. And it'll be very interesting to see how, I know he was thrilled to be picked by a Derek Jeter organization, how he's able to turn his professional career in. But they would have been two very different picks because, obviously, Watson is someone who you'd expect would spend several years in the minor league.
Yeah, the money is important, so people understand that. If you go above the slot and you pay more, well, then you don't have as much money as you go down through the draft when you may want to pay a little extra to keep someone away from going to college, which is what they did last year with Kyle Harrison.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I think their fourth round pick, Eric Silva from J. Sarah Catholic High School down in Southern California, you know, is someone that I think will get maybe not the exact above slot deal that Kyle Harrison got, but certainly will get more than that fourth round slot would be indicated for. And he's a guy with a lot of upside, big athleticism, and someone that they, you know, kind of hope to have a similar impact as a Kyle Harrison in terms of, you know, being that young, projectable pitching talent that can move through. So, you know, you kind of have to balance all your needs when you're sort of looking at that. I mean, you look at, like, the Mets, for instance, Kumar Rocker fell into their lap, and, you know, they couldn't pass that up, nor do I think they should have. But if you look at the depth of what they picked the rest of those 10 rounds, you know, they weren't able to go for some of the more, you know, higher profile talent later on because they needed to take seniors that are going to sign for well below slot to get a fit Kumar's salary in. So, you know, there's a lot of calculations that these scouting departments have to make when they're making these picks.
Yeah, I think the Mets did well with Kumar Rocker. We're going to talk about him in a second because his mother's from India. And the Giants actually drafted someone whose parents are from India, from Yale, Rohan Yanda, if I said it correctly. And I'd like to talk about that. But first, I want to mention the number one pick. Was that a surprise to you that the catcher from Louisville? Of course, the Louisville players, we got a whole bunch of them last year on the Giants. But a surprise that he went number one to the Pirates?
You know, there was a lot of talk that Marcelo Meyer or some of the other high school infielders or maybe even Jack Leiter was going to go number one overall. But I think Henry Davis was always sort of in that conversation. So it wasn't completely out of left field. And I really do like what the Pirates did with their entire 10 rounds. I think they ended up with at least two sort of first round talents with their top two picks. Maybe even a third a little bit later on. So they were able to reallocate their money in a very smart way. And Henry Davis is the kind of player like Adley Rutschman was a few years ago with the Orioles that you can, you know, build around. I mean, you don't normally think of catchers as being guys you can build a foundation around, but of course the Giants with Buster Posey know that if you can, you know, what a boon that can be. And he's a really good defensive catcher in addition to being an outstanding hitter. So I think that'll be a good pick for Pittsburgh.
Well, as Casey Stengel said a long time ago when he picked Hobie Landreth as the first catcher, the first player picked in the Mets draft in 1962, he said, if you don't have a catcher, you got a lot of pass balls.
And, that's true.
And I think that's the Pirates probably thinking about that. But let's go back to Rohan Yanda. from Yale, a left-hander, and his parents are from India. You mentioned Kumar Rocker as well. Interesting pick, not only for the ethnic background, but for a young man who really didn't have much of a season because of COVID.
Yeah, well, you know, the Ivy Leagues did not have a sports season this year because of COVID. They shut all their programs down. So he didn't actually get to pitch for Yale. So it was nice to see there were a couple of Ivy League guys that went in the draft and a few that have signed as undrafted free agents already. And, you know, it's good to see that because you hate to see think that, you know, their opportunities for a professional career were taken away by COVID. But he's a really interesting story, you know, a brilliant kid, speaks three languages, started foundations and done all sorts of things that I can't imagine doing in my lifetime. And he's only 21 or whatever and doing that already. But, you know, he's a left-handed pitcher. He went and pitched in this New England Collegiate League where scouts got to see him a lot and generated a pretty good amount of buzz because he's up to 97. He's got this big slider and he's really just kind of tapping into what he can do. He really remade his whole body during COVID. There was a place in Charlotte, North Carolina, where he's from that he went and trained and turned himself into physically a much different pitcher. And he's a guy that people had seen in high school. He had been on Team USA for the 15 and under and I believe 14 and under squads as well. So it's not somebody who came completely out of nowhere, but he went from sort of a pitchability guy to suddenly someone with big stuff. So, yeah, a really interesting guy. And, you know, I think obviously his bonus demands will be a lot different and certainly will allow them to maybe sign Eric Silva and a couple of other people. But it's not a, like, completely wasted pick because of talent, because this guy seems like he's got quite a bit of talent.
You know, Melissa Lockhart with us. Always a pleasure to have you on. Of course, she writes for The Athletic. The Giants really did go all out for college pitching. The number two pick, Mikulski, then Mason Black, one out of Fordham, one out of Lehigh. Then, of course, we had Silva, as you mentioned, and Honda. Then we have an Ohio State pick, someone from Maine as well, a Cal relief pitcher. What about all these other picks? Because every time you read one of the scouting reports, it makes me feel like, okay, give them a locker at Oracle Park. We're ready to play.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big difference between stuff and actually being big league ready, but there is a lot of big stuff, and I think that's sort of the overriding theme for these pitchers that they took, is they went for guys that, I can't remember the exact statistic, but, you know, you looked at the list of the pitchers they picked, and they were all among the top 20 from the college pitchers that they picked in terms of strikeout to walk ratio this year. And I think that was clearly something that they were targeting. You know, they're looking for guys that can miss bats. They're looking for guys that can move the ball around the strike zone. And, you know, guys that have the kind of physical build that they can, possibly project to be starters. And you mentioned Seth Onsue, the Ohio State lefty. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, it was kind of surprising not to see him picked in the 2020 draft. I think he led all of NCAA baseball in strikeouts per nine innings before COVID shut down the season. And, you know, a lefty who can really throw hard and has maybe the best curveball in the draft, and did not have the senior season that he was hoping for. But I think you're buying into the idea that, you know, it was a weird year and that the talent that he showed as a junior is something that they can really build off of. And you mentioned Ian Villers from Cal, the reliever. He's from Walnut Creek, went to Northgate, I believe, and hard throwing guy. And he's a guy that could kind of move a little bit quickly, like RJ Dabovich from Arizona State in last year's draft class. And, you know, he might be a guy that you do see at Oracle Park fairly soon. So a nice mix of different pitchers.
Yeah, I think it's terrific. I think the draft was excellent. And like you say, they have their way, the strikeout to walk ratio and velocity and this and that. And I think they got what they wanted. At the end of the draft, there were two young players, two position players. And if they would sign with the Giants, it would be a big deal. But they were sort of, as I don't want to say afterthoughts, but they were kind of towards the end of the draft.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, Michael Holmes did say after the end of day three that they feel like they will be competitive with offers for all four of the high school picks that they picked, the round 11 outfielder, Donovan McIntyre, and then Sylvan and Urban Meyer and Vance Honeycutt, who are the 19th and 20th round picks. And I don't know that they will get all of them, but even if they take, you know, sign three of them, I think that's a pretty good haul. And, you know, there's some power projection with Urban Meyer, third baseman, profiles, you know, well at that spot. And he's committed to a two-year school, so I think he may be easier to pull away from that college commitment than Honeycutt, who's got a UNC commitment, and obviously that's a big program and a big opportunity there. But there certainly are flyers that you can take after the 10th round, because if you don't sign those guys, it doesn't impact your bonus pool at all. And there's now the undrafted free agency period, so they can go out and sign other players. So if they don't come away with 20 from the draft, they'll find ways to fill out their system otherwise.
Well, these other two, the last two you mentioned, Meyer and Honeycutt, big power potential. Honeycutt's father went to UNC, so that's going to be a problem getting him away from there. Melissa, interesting in the draft, the first Orthodox Jewish pitcher was drafted by the Arizona Diamondbacks, Jason Steinmetz, number 77 in the draft, the big kid, 6'5", throws hard, big curveball. And I said, is this Koufax's kid or something?
Yeah, you know, it's really been an interesting story to follow, because obviously – with having to observe the Sabbath, it can be tricky with sports in general, for American kids to be able to be taken seriously. But, you know, he worked really hard to kind of prove that he is going to be fully committed to this, and that, you know, as a pitcher, I think, especially with the way the minor leagues are and the fact that now you're on 6 days and then automatically off, you know, they can work around him not participating for a 24-hour period and still be able to have him pitching on a regular schedule. So, yeah, I think it's a terrific story, and, you know, one that I think people, especially in the Orthodox Jewish community, are going to be following really closely.
Well, it's really, he says he will pitch on a Jewish holiday, and he will pitch on the Sabbath, but he will not ride to the ballpark, so he walks miles. Sometimes
yeah.
He gets to the ball, and he keeps kosher with his own food and all that. But very interesting. Big kid, left-hander, and, of course, everyone's always waiting for the next Koufax to show up. Before we let you go, Melissa Lockhart here, the A's. Let's talk about at least their top pick and who they went after.
Yeah, well, the name will sound familiar because it's Max Muncy, part two, I guess. But a really athletic shortstop from Thousand Oaks High School. A lot of power potential with him, above average runner, and defensively, they really feel like he can stay at shortstop long term. Which seems like a really bright kid and a lot of energy. I think similar in terms of the type of skills and projection that they were looking at last year when they took Tyler Soderstrom with their number one pick. And I think they've been really pleased with the results with Tyler so far. And I think this is kind of a similar philosophy type selection.
Well, it's great to have you on. I'm looking forward to our next visit when we can catch up a little bit on the Futures game and Luciano and Ramos and Jelly and the rest of them. I think the Giants farm system, from what I read and what I see and just listening to Kyle Haynes and people like that on the show, I think it's in great shape. If I had to give it an A, B, C, D, whatever, I would give it almost a B+, A minus right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's easily in the top five among the 30 franchises, and it's on its way up.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much, and we'll follow certainly Will Bednar. If he becomes a relief pitcher, I want you to know you heard it here first.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for being on the show. All right.
Thank you.
That is Melissa Lockhart. Always a pleasure. You can read her in The Athletic. More coming up. KNBR 680-1045, the sports leader.